Audiomo 2015, day 27, and this is episode 26 of episode 26 of From Fat to Fit at 47, or Fat to Fit at 47. You've stopped listening by now, haven't you? This is ridiculous. Can't even get the title out. Anyway, today, in this episode, I thought I'd talk about the longest run that I've ever done, which was the New York City Marathon. And New York is a special place to me. It's special because I ran a marathon there. But that's not the most important thing that happened in New York, that visit. I've only been to New York once proper. I've sat in the airport a couple of times, catching connecting flights elsewhere. But I've only ever been to New York once that I was in the city and could really take in the city. So I was conscious of being there rather than sitting in an airport lounge. And it was a great experience. It really was. I was running for a charity, Scope, in the UK. And I also, through my work, they were really helpful and supportive. I was able to, through clients and what have you, raise a nice amount of money. And as it happened, I raised the most money for Scope out of the people running the marathon that year. So I won a helicopter ride over the city, and that was just fabulous. To see New York from the sky, to be in a helicopter for the first time as well. I'd never been in a helicopter. I was a little bit anxious and hesitant because I'm not great with heights either, and helicopters move very differently from aeroplanes, obviously, because the way they take off and the way they can maneuver. So for the first couple of minutes, it was a bit of a scary experience for me, but soon that dissipated and it was just unadulterated joy flying over New York. And this was in 2000, so the Twin Towers were still standing. And a very different city to what it is now, I gather. But the helicopter ride was fantastic. But that wasn't the most important thing that happened to me while I was in New York either. So let me just talk about the marathon itself. It was quite funny. To do the New York Marathon, you have to get up quite early in the morning and you get driven out to the Farrinazo Straits Bridge? I forget. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I could have told you all of this. My mind and my memory is a bit hazy. But the bus driver didn't know the route. So we got on this bus and that collected people from a number of hotels, from a number of charities. So we all piled onto this bus and there was loads of people on this bus. And off we went to the starting line. And the bus driver couldn't figure out how to get there. And he got lost several times. And being a man, it took him quite a while before he would ask for directions. And we were getting quite concerned at one point. And people were starting to speak up because people were starting to worry that we weren't going to get to the start line on time. Anyway, we did. And I seem to remember it was a military base we got dropped at some barracks where we were able to change and where we could sort of hang around and wait in tents and heated spaces for the race to start. As it turned out, because we were so delayed in arriving, it worked out quite well for us because it meant we were all on a nice heated bus for a while longer than we would have been if the bus driver had actually known the route to get there. So I seem to remember that we didn't have to hang around too much for the start. And the way it works is you kind of figure out, okay, how long do I think I'm going to take over this run? How long do I think it's going to take me to complete the marathon? And you slot yourself into a segment in the start mass, if you like, that roughly corresponds with the time that you reckon you'll take. That means that you don't, at the start, get in the way of all the fast people. And if you're clever, the way to do it is to actually go one or two groups back, because it means that in the latter stages of the marathon, particularly if it's your first one, that you're catching people up constantly, and that can be a great motivator. I loved running this marathon. I thought the city was wonderful. Every street, every borough, every neighborhood it seemed that we ran through, but it seemed to have a street party, or there were loads of people that come out to watch what was going on and to cheer people on. Really friendly. You know, we hear about New York being one of the least friendly places in the world. But I just remember it's a very friendly place. Everybody was out. Lots of support for the runners. I had a slogan written on my shirt, which was, I think it was "Take the Money" was written on the front and "Run" was written on the back, because, you know, sort of a charity thing. And I thought, let's see what happens. And people were yelling it out as I was going past. People were calling out, you know, "Take the money." And then they'd see me pass and they'd shout what was on the back as well. Fantastic. I was carrying a little bit of an injury, I seem to remember, and that really started to play up in about mile 20. And I just nursed myself home, basically. I think my time that I ran was 4 hours and 22 minutes, something like that. I can't quite remember, but what I do remember is getting to the finish line. And I was just in so much pain, but I couldn't lift my foot up because there was what you get is some kind of electronic tag that you tie to your shoe, and that measured when you passed the start line and when you passed the start line and when you got to the finish line. I think that's what it measured anyway. Certainly, it measured your finishing time, and you had to raise your foot up for somebody to take the tag off. And I couldn't raise my foot. My leg hurt so much. I was so tired. In fact, I was so broken. I didn't run for 3 months afterwards. I just couldn't. But I was in considerable pain, but it was great to finish. And then when the results came, it was quite funny to see my result, because I think my time was like 4 hours and 22 minutes. And there it was, Roger Overall, 4 hours, 22 minutes, aged 60. Now, I was 32 at the time, Yes, I was 32 at the time. So if I go in for a race again, and if I run a marathon again, I'm going to have to do better than my 60-year-old self. So in the official results for the New York Marathon, I ran it as a 60-year-old. I don't know what happened there. And it was really interesting in the sort of the days afterwards, where because we were in New York for a little bit longer. I think we were there for a week. And after the marathon, people would walk around town and they'd refuse to take their shoes off, or they'd have their medal. They'd be so proud of their medal and they'd have it on, but under a T-shirt, but the ribbon would be showing. And it was really nice to see the number of New Yorkers. No, I didn't do this, but some other people who were running the marathon for the charity. One lady in particular, I remember, walked around for days afterwards still in her runners and her training gear and the medal kind of hidden but showing. But what was really nice was the number of people I saw come up to her and say, "Well done," just regular New Yorkers. So it was a really, really, really great experience and very well organized. You, at the start, you drop your clothes off into, I think it was a UPS van. And at the end, they're all lined up. It's done with military precision. It's really well run. Like I say, the crowd support in New York is fantastic, or it certainly was in 2000 when I ran it. So I'd highly recommend New York. If you're thinking of doing a marathon and you're thinking of doing a first marathon, it's a great marathon because of the tidal wave of support and warmth that I felt as a runner doing it. Really excellent. But that wasn't the big thing that happened in New York. What happened in New York that really was the big thing, the life-changing thing for me, was that I, in the run-up to New York, had bought a necklace, and I bought a necklace for my then girlfriend because I knew she wasn't that keen on a ring. So I had bought a necklace, and I had a plan that I would propose to Anne, my wife, on top of the Empire State Building. Now, my brother and my mother were there as well in New York. They'd flown over to see me run the marathon and to support me. And I thought, well, it'd be great if they could see me propose to Anne. So I told my brother, and I said, you know, I've got to let one of them know. I said, look, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to go to the Empire State Building. We'll go up it, and I'll give you the nod. And, you know, don't say anything to Mum, but make sure she's around, but make sure she's not interfering or talking to us or anything. but just make sure she can see what's going on, because it'd be a lovely surprise for her as well. Anyway, we got to the Empire State Building, and the queue to get up was just incredible. I hate queues. I have no patience for queues. So I thought, well, we'll go somewhere else. And I had a backup plan, and the backup plan was Grand Union Terminal. Is that right? Yes, because Grand Union Station is the post office, isn't it, next door? Grand Union Terminal, yes. And I thought that'll be my backup plan. So I sort of decided to abort the proposal there, the marriage proposal there, and kind of said to my brother and my mum and aunt, oh, I can't be bothered waiting to go up this thing. You know, I've got to run a marathon tomorrow and I don't really want to be standing in a queue for 45 minutes. And they kind of understood that. So, but my mum was adamant. She really wanted to go up the Empire State Building. and I couldn't sort of convey, no, come with us because you'll see something special. So in the end, she and my brother went up the Empire State Building. Anne and I went to Grand Central Terminal. And there on that gloriously beautiful concourse area, which is just one of the most amazing places in the world and far more fitting than the Empire State Building, because where better to start the next phase on your journey in life than at a station? So I produced the necklace, and that was the best thing that happened to me in New York. Talk to you again soon.